Concept Crucible, episode 5.
That's totally staying in.
Yeah, might as well.
Anyway, hi everybody, how you doing? I'm Jim.
And I'm Ryan.
And as he mentioned, this is Concept Crucible Podcast, episode 5.
We have made it this far.
We have. We are too, and today we want to talk about inspiration and how inspiration relates to art, specifically to us, because we're not really authorities on inspiration generally.
Or art.
Or art. Though we will get Dan on at some point to talk about art.
Yeah.
I'm slowly shoving Dan into the notion of making videos again.
We'll just tell him that it's... We record it for posterity.
No, I'll just kidnap his paintings and leave them here.
Oh, no. Okay.
He'll have to come for those.
That'll work then.
But, yeah, I mean, inspiration, especially with websites like Uproxx and Upworthy, inspiration is a booming business.
Yep.
Sadly. But there are still lots of things out there that I think are inspiring. But there's that question of, what does it mean to be inspired, or what constitutes inspiration? And that, I think, is our icebreaker this week.
Okay. So you want me to start? Do you want to start?
You can start. I just introduced it. I always introduce the icebreaker.
So, what is inspiration? For me, it tends to be more, I almost equate, or it's a synonym for me with inspiration and emotion and evocation or evocative. I don't even know if evocation is the right word, but.
It's if you're throwing fireballs.
It could be.
That was last podcast, by the way.
Yeah, it's true. So for me, mine is ultimately bound up in feelings, or the feelings that you get from something. So when I listen to a piece of music and it creates certain kind of emotions within me, and not emotions necessarily in the classic sense of like happy or sad or whatever, just the feeling of some sort of impetus, or the feeling that something could be accomplished. So when I we talked about this before, when I was running, which you can't tell in the screen, but I am a large man.
The only reason I'm even slightly taller than Ryan is because I am mostly torso.
Yeah, and I'm hunched over. So, but anyways, I am a large man, and at one point I was consistently running around campus for fitness purposes. Mostly it was to cultivate shin splints, but I had the goal of losing weight. But it's really hard to motivate myself to run, because running is not it's not intrinsically motivating enough to overcome laziness, apathy, and pain. So I needed something that was the extra boost, and I needed something to help propel me forward. So, you know, you have your pregame ritual, but when I was running, I would listen to, I'd have a set list of 6 songs, and the first one that always kicked it off was Ecstasy or Ecstasies of Gold. The version done during the Symphony of Metallica concert, because there's the original one done by
I was gonna guess Rocket Skates.
No, it was the composer. It was from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Ennio, I think Ennio was the last name. I can't remember the composer's name off the top of my head. I will throw it in the show notes. But anyway, so Michael came in with the San Francisco Symphony Orchestra, redid it, and it's always played as Metallica's opening piece. So before they hit the stage, that's their intro piece. So the symphony plays the Ecstasies of Gold, and it's just this wonderful, it builds up from a nice slow piece, and then eventually it takes off into this soaring piece, and there's wonderful kind of march-like snare drums in there mixed in with the violins, and it just swells and swells and swells until eventually Metallica takes over. But when I was running, that was the piece that I always started running to. So I would do my stretches, go to the starting line for where I started the run, and as soon as I was ready to go, I'd hit start on the MP3 player and I would start my run. And that's what kind of built me up and got me going at the start of the run, and that would propel me forward, you know, for the 5K. It started off, and then 6 songs later, I would be done my run.
Nice.
So yeah, for me, inspiration tends to be, it brings up the kind of emotional impulse.
Yeah, and specifically sort of with music. I remember you were talking about, you saw Pixar at the symphony recently.
Right, yeah. So recently, the local symphony had a one-night performance of Pixar pieces. And it was amazing. The only other time I went to the symphony here in town, and I regret not going more often, but the last time was the John Williams one, where they played the music from John Williams' different movies, or the movies that he's been involved with. So they played, I didn't look at the, how many movies Pixar has made, but I'm pretty sure they did music from all of the Pixar movies. Nice. From Toy Story 1 all the way through to Brave and Toy Story 3 and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I found myself, because they not only did they play the music, but they also had a giant screen in the back where they cut a bunch of clips together from the movie and then played the video of it, not the audio, but they played the video of it. So essentially the orchestra was playing a live music video,
yeah,
in some sense.
Wow.
And it was amazing, and it was amazing to watch the conductor orchestrate it, because that all had to be timed together for the beats and whatnot. And I remember on even movies that I had never seen, I've never seen Ratatouille, and I hear it's an amazing movie. I've never seen it, but between the images on the screen and the music that they were playing, I felt these swells of emotion within me. Like, the music really moved me. And having never known what the story was, I mean, I can guess it. And I know.
Because I was thinking about it, for me, inspiration is much more performative. It's much more creative. I'm a person who feels pretty strong emotions normally, but... So for me, I have to be making stuff. Mm-hmm. And I brought up Pixar partly because when I go to the symphony, I forget the last thing I saw was, I think it was the U2 night. I always have to bring a notebook because I'm writing things down. I'm designing dungeons. I'm, you know, writing poetry. I'm freestyle, like just anything and everything. When I am inspired is what I categorize as inspiration is things that inspire me to create other things or to take actions. I mean, people whose work is inspiring might inspire me to be less of a jerk or be, you know, more of a jerk sometimes. Probably not more of a jerk, although younger Jim was certainly inspired by that sometimes, poorly so.
I modeled myself after House one time. I binged watched the entire
it seems
House,
problematic,
and yeah, I definitely modeled myself after House.
Are you in fact a genius Holmesian doctor?
Well, I pretend to be. I'm not. But I definitely walk around acting superior, or at least I did at the time. I still do, I imagine. But I definitely walk around with a superiority chip on my shoulder.
Yeah, so for me, like, I have to be making something. And often I'm not sort of inspired in that way by music. For me, it's usually visual or action related, like film, like something that's film. I guess is visual, but it's also auditory. It's complicated. Making film and video is complicated. If you were wondering, yeah, this is pretty hard. But that's, I guess, my short answer for it. My long answer is significantly longer, but we don't have time for that. So, I mean, part of the question is what works inspire us specifically? We wanted to talk about that in terms of art, in terms of music, in terms of film. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that hit me, Shia LaBeouf right now, by the time this podcast comes out, this will probably be over because I assume he's not going to do it for 3 months. But Shia LaBeouf right now is doing an art piece called I'm Sorry. And it's a piece, ironically, given that it's Shia LaBeouf and he's had problems with plagiarism in the past, it is a piece that is not unlike a bunch of other pieces. I'm not saying it's plagiarism because I don't know enough about the piece or the other people's pieces, but it's certainly in the same vein of a lot of extreme vulnerability art pieces. The whole shebang is that Shia LaBeouf is sitting in a room in Los Angeles with a bag over his head. And people can pay $10 and go in and do whatever they want. They can yell at him. Some of them yell at him. Some of them hold his hand. Some of them give him hugs. Some of them just, you know, sit there quietly. And it creates this moment of intense awkwardness and vulnerability. And lots of other artists have used this to great effect, too. They use it to make us see what we're capable of when faced with a helpless person or a person who is willing to be helpless. They use it to make us feel vulnerable, because when we see someone in a condition of extreme vulnerability, we feel open to that. I mean, and you get a lot of the time when these are happening, you know, you get to see the sort of height of people's cruelty, but you also get to see the sort of height of people's compassion. Mm-hmm. And that is something that inspires me. It inspires me to make things. It inspires me to act in a way that is different from how I'd normally act. Normally, I spend a lot of time thinking about vulnerability, and one of the things those kinds of pieces remind me of is that vulnerability is not a flaw. Vulnerability is a strength. Mm-hmm. I mean, the being willing and able to be vulnerable with people is an act of courage and an act of trust. It is not an act of weakness, mm-hmm. Though it is often perceived as an act of weakness, especially if you were a dude. Mm-hmm.
It's easy to see why. I mean, vulnerability ultimately is the courage comes from the willingness to allow somebody's power to be put upon you. Like it's, well, I mean that the perception of the power imbalance. Meanwhile, you're the one who's allowing it. So ultimately, you're the one who has all the power because you're allowing it to happen to you. But I can see why it would be seen as a weakness.
I suppose I hadn't thought about it in quite that way. Partly because, I think the most important times to be vulnerable are when I feel the least empowered. So I mean a good example of this is in romance. I mean, part of loving somebody is and caring about them in that way is the willingness to be vulnerable, and giving it you afford them a certain power over you. And you don't necessarily do so willingly. And that, I think, is part of the anxiety that people get with it, is that it's not willing. Mm-hmm. And I should rephrase it. I think I phrased it badly when I said the willingness to be vulnerable, but to accept vulnerability. Mm-hmm. Vulnerability is a thing that you have no matter what. You're not necessarily letting your guard down, mm-hmm. So much as accepting that it is okay to, you know, the knowledge to not allow the knowledge that someone could hurt you to get to you. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's I think that sort of better illustrates the kind of power relationship we're talking about. Because you're right, when you talk about being invulnerable, it's just, or being vulnerable, it's just a matter of, oh, I'm letting you do something, as opposed to you are empowered to do this thing no matter what. And I am trusting you not to.
Well, it could even go deeper. I can't help but to think about Epictetus a little bit. But the idea, like, vulnerability and the strength in vulnerability is that...
It's not a real concept, Crucible podcast, unless we talk about at least one dead Greek philosopher.
No, I guess it's true. Dead pseudo-white man, because he's Mediterranean and...
But regardless...
Anyways,
no,
that's not the point.
Make your point.
The point is I wonder if there's something in by accepting vulnerability... You're actually sending the signal that really other people don't have any power over you, and that's something that Epictetus taught about. You know, you can mm-hmm. be a slave, but the only time that the master has power over you is when you allow them to have power over you. And I mean, that was, I don't know, maybe if that, like, Nietzsche would talk about that as being like a slave morality, that, you know, you just take your licks because you're weak. And you know, he might have something different to say about it, but like Epictetus was talking about the idea that, and or just a more modern context of Eleanor Roosevelt, you know, the only people who can make you feel inferior are the ones that you allow to make you feel inferior, kind of deal.
I don't know that I think modern psychology has more to say about that kind of thing.
But I'm an armchair psychologist. That.
Yeah,
that's the way it works.
I mean that's sort of my, the other thing I guess about art is that you can be inspired. You don't have to be inspired by real people. Hmm. You can be inspired by fictional people. I used the example earlier of there's a great bit in the Superman radio show, Superman and versus the Klan of the Burning Cross, which is Superman versus the KKK. For those of you not from the Americas, that's the Ku Klux Klan. They're a group of white supremacists, and they're really bad people. I feel no qualms about saying that. But and the part of the idea of having Superman fight the KKK in the radio show was that kids who grew up listening to the Superman radio show would understand that the KKK were not a force for good, that their values are at odds with Superman's, and Superman, as far as a moral compass goes, barring the last movie, he's a pretty good authority on that kind of thing. I mean, if you're Superman's enemy, odds are good that you're falling on the sort of evilish side of the alignment tree. To go once again back to our last podcast. But I don't know. What about you? What kinds of art do you find inspiring?
Well, I guess it kind of depends on the context. So, as I said, with when it came to running, a particular kind of driving music, I also likened it when I was back in cadets that my favorite thing to keep me going was the military music, more specifically pipes and drums. But I like the driving beat of the drum, whether it was the bass drum or the interesting snare drum and the snare fills. So that really worked for me. At Pixar, for more evocative feelings, like for example in Cars, I don't know if I've ever watched Cars all the way
You should
through.
watch Cars. It's a really good movie.
That's what I hear, and I
I've seen
think
it about 30 times.
that's what happens when you babysit,
Yes.
right? So I think I've seen it all the way through before, or it could be like E.T. For the longest time, I'd never seen E.T. start to finish. I always saw it in pieces, and not necessarily in the right order. So with Cars, but at the symphony, I was watching it, and there's the scene at the where within the last race where what's the protagonist's name?
Lightning McQueen.
Lightning McQueen. So when McQueen is getting ready to win the race, and then he thinks back to his what happened to his mentor, and he stops short of winning, goes back down and helps it out. Basically,
That is basically the best part of Cars.
probably, and it's not exactly a novel thing. There are plenty of cases in pop culture where, like, you go and help your enemy, or you go and help your perceived antagonist, and you help them across, and then everybody kind of wins because of that act of compassion. But I remember, again, I watched it and I saw it stop, and then whatever was happening in the music, but between the music and then the visuals, it was just, it really kind of hit home. Like, I had a lump in my throat of just this wonderful act of self-sacrifice that, ultimately wasn't about winning, and it wasn't about being number one. It was about something much more than that. Or another time, or another thing that I really feel evocative about is like real intense fights between like the forces of good and evil, or between who's supposed to be the good guys and who's supposed to be the bad guys. So Luke versus Vader Part 2 in Return of the Jedi. This is where it's the music. Like, it's I remember the first time that I paid attention to the music. So right after Vader antagonizes Luke, like, if I can't turn you to the dark side, then perhaps you, like, I'll be able to turn your sister to the dark side.
Yeah.
And Luke lunges out at him, and it has this wonderful shot where the camera is situated, kind of like back under the stairs, under the platform. So all of the foreground is dark, and even all of basically Luke and Darth are dark, and then you have the blue of the background, and the camera does this really slow pan as they're fighting, and Vader's being backed up, and Luke is attacking him, and the music swells, and it's mostly what you hear is maybe the violins a little bit, but it's mostly a chorus of just like ooh, the going back and forth on these whole notes. But I just remember the first time I got chills watching it just on the music alone, and it just had this wonderful. It was just so evocative, like, of this kind of heroic last stand. Because now, I mean, you could say what you want about Luke, but now he's no longer just fighting for the redemption of his father, which is what he intended to do when he came there. Like, now he's like fighting for his sister. Like, if he doesn't win, then not only will the Emperor win, but now he's going to let his family down, and in this case, his sister, right? So it really hammered home. And like I said, the for me, the inspiration, and it really comes down to like these evocative feelings.
I
So
always think of the how it should have ended, where Vader's just like, "I have a daughter. I have a daughter. This is amazing.
time to
Stormtroopers, I have a daughter."
celebrate. That there is so much, right? We should definitely link to that if you
We
haven't
totally
seen
will.
it. There is so much that they do that is awesome on
Yes.
that channel with that video series. So
Because I'm Batman.
yeah, you should
That actually should
go
be.
and save Amy. I love that one. So
Oh.
I guess I'm telling too many stories. So try to narrow it down. What works inspire me? Usually things that for musically, usually it's either stuff that's very I hesitate to use the word tribal, but very drum heavy,
Okay.
very percussive,
It seems like
and
a much better way to phrase it than tribal.
well, because I like the tribal drums, but it's not just it's very percussive. I like percussive. It's the same. I really like heavy metal, but I like the marriage between the brutalness of like metalcore, which some viewers or some listeners might think that metalcore is actually not very brutal at all. that's fine. But I like the marriage between the brutality of metalcore with the heavy riffs and the intense drumming married with the melodic elements. So I like the soaring guitars. I like the wonderful like noodling guitar bits and vocals that soar over top of whatever's going on with the instruments. So I like percussive. I like stuff that's driving, and I do like not to be too sexual, but I like the swelling side of the music when the music really the swells. Swelling side. Yeah, the just like I love it when music crescendos and when the music pick up.
Are you avoiding using the word climax? Is that
no? I don't like the climax. I like the build up. The climax is usually so boring.
The climax is underwhelming. Is what yeah, you're saying?
I love it when the music swells or. When you hang a note on the it's been too long since I've been to music theory, but there's a term for when you bring it up to
like 11.
No, not 11. No. I'm talking about like when you're playing like say a chord progression or something, and you end it on the only thing that comes to my mind is like seventh or ninth, where it's you hang it on a very unstable note and you sit there and your mind wants to resolve it down back down into like the do or first position or what the octave or whatever. It just sits there and you create this tension with the note, and right before it resolves, I like when it builds up to that and it slows down and you're waiting for the payoff, you're waiting for it, and then finally it comes and the music resolves. I like that kind of stuff.
Ironically, as the music making half of this duo, I spend way less time thinking about music than you do, apparently, because music is actually not high on my sort of list of stuff that inspires me. I mean, it can make me emotional, but it rarely inspires me to make stuff. Mm-hmm. Usually when I'm listening to music, I'm visual art, on the other hand. I mean, I just finished writing a song about the picture that's behind Ryan's head that you can barely make out. By this time, hopefully, I will have finished the song, and the song will be out, and if it is, I will link it right here over his face, and also in the show notes for those of you listening. But I've still got a lot of work to do on the lyrics, but like for music to inspire me, music is sort of finished. It never inspires me to make music, and sometimes inspires me to make other things, but I get a lot of mine from visual art and from film. I don't watch a lot of movies anymore, but when I do, that's what I'm looking for, is that moment that just moves me to change my behavior, or moves me to make a thing, or just sometimes just moves me emotionally. I talk about this scene in Mr. and Mrs. Smith that I have no idea why it affects me, but it does. And music, I guess, is the same way. I have yet to make it through a rendition of One Tin Soldier on my guitar without breaking down and crying, and I have no clue why that is. Mm-hmm. Like, none. I was, but something it hits some moment in my past that is clearly very important to me. But I have no real memory of what that is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, most of my stuff comes from, visual art, like things that I can build on. Music always seems finished to me. Whereas with visuals, there's always some other story to tell. I mean, you look at the art behind me, it's all fragments of a thing that I could tell a story about. And that's what I want in art, is that tiny little sliver. And every once in a while I get something. I always think a friend of mine, Nick Heron, did this amazing painting of Victoria Park. And I will try and find the link on his site and post it below, because it is beautiful. And in general, you should check out Nick's work, because it's amazing. But he did this painting, and it hit me because I remembered standing in the spot from where he had taken the picture that he painted the painting from. Mm-hmm. It was a pretty abstract painting, but there was enough Victoria Park there that I could see it. And I had stood in that spot 25 years ago, when I first moved to this big, huge town that I didn't know anybody, but at least we lived right near the park. And that was really exciting to me, because I was 5. Mm-hmm. And I was like, shit, yeah, park. But, I don't know. I don't get a lot from music. But I suppose we should move on. and talk about the takeaway from this. Why is it important to be inspired by art? I mean, lots of people are inspired by the actions of other human beings. I mean, the internet has been great for that. That you can find actions of compassion that are going on all around the world, and it's easier to hear about them. And I think it is important to be inspired by them. But art specifically, things that other people have made, why is it important to be inspired by that?
I know from, and I probably can only speak about myself here. I know that I'm moderately okie dokie at getting stuff done. I'm not good at doing stuff, even if I don't
want to see that on your next resume. Moderately okie dokie at getting things done.
Well, I mean, the proof in the pudding for me is I ultimately got my thesis done.
Fair enough.
I mean, it wasn't timely. It wasn't neat. But it got done. Like, it was a brute force effort, and it got done. It got bound up. It's hard copy and everything like that. So, I mean, at the very least, on my, like, lifetime CV, I can say I'm moderately okie dokie at getting stuff done that I don't want to get done.
On a lifetime CV, that actually sounds pretty good, to be fair.
But, nevertheless, I do recognize that there are times where I just cannot motivate myself to do something, or I can't really connect somehow with something that I should be connecting with. And I really do find that art, whether it's music or video, because I've been inspired from all different kinds. I guess maybe static, like visual art, paintings and drawings and stuff. Slightly less inspiring, it's always when it's coupled with a story. So, for example, comic books. But the art in and of itself wasn't necessarily the most motivating part of it. But, you know, when I want to feel courageous, I think of, you know, like from my youth, the Ghostbusters, you know, at the very end of the movie, even though, you know, you knew it was going to turn out okay, the idea that these four guys accepted the fact that they're probably not going to walk away from their final act, but it was the only thing that they could think of in order to save the city.
You know? I would think that no one walks away from their final act.
Okay. Touche. I'll try to be cleaner with my words.
I'm just being a pedantic asshole.
No, it's quite all right. You caught me. But that idea that there's a heroic portrayal or a personal sacrifice, it was also, I got that feeling. I don't really like war movies for the sake of war movies, but The Final Charge, it always gives me a lump in my throat. Whatever you think of Mel Gibson, in the movie We Were Soldiers, The Very Last Stand. So I'm not saying like anything against the Viet Cong or whatever. I'm not saying like America good, Viet Cong bad. But in that final portrayal, when he kind of looks around at everybody, pulls out his bayonet and gives the final order to fix bayonets, you get the sense that they didn't really know if they were coming out of that alive, but they were going to go and make their last stand. You know, and I'm not saying that all heroic last stands are things to inspire people. I mean, Custer and his last stand and the massacres that went on. We can't ignore the cultural context of those things, but you can maybe distill a little bit of like the personal side of it, that, you know, some guy on the front line and, you know, the courage needed to go and do these things. Or
when there is something exciting about, I mean it's, I think it's a sort of fundamental property of mortality, that, you know, your life is the final thing you have to give. You know what I mean? You're Patrick Henry, and I regret that I have but one life to give for my country. And the notion that you would value something so highly that you would lay down the thing that you have only one of for it. You know, I mean, if you can always, you can find new family, you can rebuild wealth, you can grow back arms and legs with the right science. We have the technology, you know, but your life, you only get one.
Right. So I guess to try to tie it all up, I sometimes think it's inspired because there are times where you don't necessarily at that moment have it within you to do what needs to be done or be the person that you need to be. And sometimes I feel that it's important to be able to, emotional crutch is the wrong word, but to be able to draw power to draw inspiration or courage from something else to move you in that direction, to be able to do what needs to be done, which is ultimately, like we talked about this a little bit before the show, that I tend to really identify and get invested with characters. I really enjoy, well, we talked a little bit about it earlier with House, but yeah. As you can tell, I'm big on Doctor Who right now, and I look at Doctor Who as a possible moral exemplar. I mean, whatever you think of Stephen Moffat or Russell T. Davies, or however you think about the politics around the show and how it's written and how the characters are treated.
But the character of the Doctor.
The character of the Doctor, whether old Who or new Who, there are qualities about him that, or qualities about the character, because I'm even willing to say, like, there could be qualities of a female Doctor that you just ultimately want to emulate.
I hope there could be qualities about a female Doctor.
No. But you know what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
But you talked about it, like, compassion. From me, I like the cleverness as well, but the idea of just somebody who is able to do what is morally right or morally good, even if the story sometimes seems ambiguous about it, that the Doctor is willing to do harm for the greater good, you know, like the fall of Gallifrey, or even the second episode of season 5 when he's willing to basically kill the brain of a space whale in order to end its suffering.
Yeah.
You know, like, the Doctor should have found a way to be able to do it without Amy, so to speak. But at that particular moment, based on what he had seen at that point, he was willing to end the suffering of this creature that probably had nobody else in the universe like it. You know, he was going to make the wrong decision, ultimately, according to the story. But still, like, the character is, I think, something that you can still try to strive towards. So I think that's... For me, that's why it's important, is because I'm not perfect and I'm not always able to do what needs to be done. Sometimes I need a little bit of help. And I think art, you mentioned it earlier, art is usually eternal, and usually it's something that's always there. You can always draw inspiration from it. So I think that's why it's important.
I mean, I agree with you for the most part, although you are sublimely a virtue ethicist in that regard, and I don't model people the same way.
I think at the season closer of this podcast...
will be the virtue ethics episode.
We're building towards it. We're laying the groundwork until eventually we have the epic finale, two-part conclusion of virtue ethics.
The virtue ethics slap bite.
Where I die, but we run the potential possibility that I will come back for season 2.
But for me, I think you're right that art is permanent, art is always there, and that's it for me too. Like I draw a lot of strength from people around me, my friends, my family, that kind of thing, but they're not always accessible, and they're not always accessible when I require strength. And so in those moments I can turn to art, in those moments I can turn to you know, things that, and that I guess it sounds emotive and it sounds, you know, sort of emotional, and it is sometimes, but sometimes it's also performative. Like I need to make something, you know, whether it's, you know, I'm helping somebody move, or, you know, I need to have a blog post for this week, and I better think of something because I need to have a blog post for this week. But I'm not feeling creative, and when you're not feeling creative, there's that notion that you have never had a good idea, mm-hmm. ever, and that all previous works have been a giant waste of time. You know, and you're just living in this hollow make work project. It really sucks. But
grad school.
Yeah, no. In that moment. That is when I turn to art, and I turn to music or film, or you know, I have a lot of, I call them fetishes. They're sitting around my room. You can see a couple of them up here, just barely. I've got my rock, and in some of the other videos, you can see my mac and cheese and things like that. And I have these objects that aren't art. They're just objects. But the art objects are slowly becoming more important because they can draw me out of my shell better. Mm-hmm. But I think if I were to sum up sort of yours and mine, I think that is the point where we come together, mm-hmm. is on why it's important. We might have different definitions. We might be inspired by entirely different things. Like you're really musical and I'm really visual. But if I were to sum it up in three words, it would be 1 more inch. I mean, that is what inspiration gives you. That is what, whether it's an emotional inch, whether it's a performative inch, all in that moment when all you really need is to go 1 inch further than you have. Art will help you get there. Mm-hmm. And it will move you get there, and it will do so timelessly, it will do so eternally. You can be inspired by works of art and literature from 3,000 years ago. You can be inspired by works of art and literature from yesterday, but it will help you get that 1 inch further that you need. And then you have just to go 1 inch beyond that. Mm-hmm. And further and further. This, in fact, is a concept from a piece of art, because I'm cribbing it, I don't think directly, but pretty closely, from V for Vendetta, mm-hmm. where they talked about exactly that.
Any Given Sunday, I believe, also talked about it in terms of, because it's a football movie, so everything's in inches there too.
It's American football. What are you gonna do?
True. But yeah, I think it's a really good way to look at it. That it's, and I don't recall off the top of my head, but the where the reference comes from. But the idea of the muses, you know, even when you're down, the muses will sing to you to help you just go that much further. And ultimately, like, art and music and stuff are, in some sense, the muses, you know, divinely created, so to speak, and brought down to give us a glimpse of the eternal, if we're going to go the Platonic route.
We're going to be mystics about it briefly, and we can be mystics briefly. I'm wearing a Power Rangers shirt, after all.
And it's our podcast. We can do whatever we want. So.
Well, within reason.
Yeah.
But, so I guess our question for you is, what inspires you? And share the things that inspire you below, because the one great thing about being inspired by art is you can share it around, and it isn't decreased by sharing. It is, in fact, improved mm-hmm. by sharing, and people's experiences are improved by sharing. So if you are listening to this off the post, I will include some pictures and some things that inspire me, and Ryan will include some that inspire him mm-hmm. Just at the bottom. If you are not, go to the post where you will find them. If you are watching us, go there. In fact, it's the links right down here. And you'll get the full show notes, and you will get some links of some cool stuff. But yeah, leave your comments, because I would love to see them.
And who knows, you might inspire other people through what inspires you.
I hope so. Well, I mean, that's really, mutual inspiration is really what we're going for. It's like the best kind of circle jerk.
Yeah.
That's where we're going to leave it for this week, I think. We have just jumped some kind of shark.
Yeah. Anyways, I'm Ryan.
And I'm Jim.
And this is the Concept Crucible Podcast, signing out. Stay awesome.